Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to ProWrestling.net's very first Progress Wrestling audio review. My name is Hayden Gleed. I'm joined this evening by my British partner in crime, the self-proclaimed world's sexiest man, Darren Gutteridge. How you doing, my friend?
I mean, I'm okay. That was a pretty good introduction. But I make a point of calling you Mr. Hayden Gleed, and you did not return the favour, so I'm a little bit disappointed in you.
Well, I'm not English. I'm Welsh, so I don't have the same politeness as you do.
So you're rude, is what you're telling me. All Welsh people are rude.
No, I just don't stand in ceremony and you know, just conform. You know, I'm a British anarchist.
I know you didn't conform because you chose to have a football team that actually won some matches.
Oh, you're actually dissing your own country. You've done my job for me.
We got dumped out by Iceland. How can I defend the mighty England right now?
And their captain plays for Cardiff City.
Yes, both. Players that scored against us play for Welsh teams, so yeah. I think you're all just in on it to begin with. It was just some big FIFA probably cooked up some conspiracy, because FIFA hate us even more than you do. So, yeah, everyone's out to get us. It's not their fault.
So there's no paranoia whatsoever?
None at all.
Any hoozles, before we get into the review tonight, I just want to take a quick moment to talk about the ProWrestling.net membership. For our first show, this is going to be all access, meaning it's free for the non-members. However, moving forward, the Progress Wrestling Review will be for members only, I'm afraid. But as well as the great Progress Wrestling audio reviews you're going to get, there's a ton of other audio content exclusive to members if you sign up for .NET membership. You get the Raw review, the SmackDown review, NXT review, Lucha Underground review, ROH review with Darren and myself. And on top of this, you also get things like Jason's Q&A, the flagship show .NET Weekly, which is basically a show that Jason and a co-host run down the news on a weekly basis, and it usually contains first-run backstage news that you won't hear anywhere else. There's loads and loads of stuff. You also get ad-free access to the website. You also get access to the .NET forum. It's fantastic. So if you want to try us out for 1 month, it's $7.50 or $66 for the year. Darren, I'm sure we will have more British listeners for this audio than we usually do. So how much roughly is $7.50 in British pound sterling at the moment?
Oh, wow. Well,
I'm putting you on the spot there.
It hovers around £4, high £4. But after Brexit, it could be £7.49. pennies for all I know.
But basically, for about £5, the same price as a foot-long Subway, you get access to everything that we've ever done on ProWrestling.net and everything that we're going to be doing moving forward. So if you want to give it a shot, go to the main page of ProWrestling.net, look for the sign-up area in the top right, and off you go. So with that being said, we're going to look at Chapter 32 of Progress Wrestling tonight, which was named 5,000 to 1. This event happened at the Electric Ballroom in Camden in North London on the 26th of June 2016. Darren, what were your overall thoughts of the show?
Good points and very much low points on this show. It wasn't the kind of banner episode I was hoping for us to start off our Progress journey together, shall we say. But what did you think?
I think I enjoyed it a lot more than you. The first half I thought was outstanding, and the second half was good, but could have been better. So I think we're sort of around the same level, but I think as we go through, we shall see. And by the way, you saying a Progress journey, I've just got this image of me and you holding hands skipping into the sunset.
I don't know where the holding hand parts come from, but I'm okay with it. Well, we should give a little bit of background to Progress, because as you said, we may have some American listeners, we have some British people, or people from all around the world.
Exactly.
Who are not really up to speed with Progress. You may have heard the name crop up here and there, most recently in that they held two WWE Cruiserweight Classic matches at previous shows. They're pretty much, at the moment, the biggest company, I'd say, independent-wise, in the UK.
Yeah.
You've got ICW in Scotland, you've got Revolution Pro, and you've got Preston City Wrestling that are also on their level, so to speak, but I think Progress is really the one that's gaining the most notoriety around the world. You may have heard, I know that Will Pruitt is an avid watcher of Progress, or at least he used to be, I don't know if he still is, but he used to watch it all the time. Lots of other .NET staffers have checked out Progress Wrestling. And, yeah, it's kind of grown naturally from they started in a small venue in London, and now they're playing what is actually a sizable venue. I've actually been to the Electric Ballroom to see a Progress show. It was, I can remember this, they all have stupid titles and they're hard to remember which one it was. It was I Don't Like to Use the Sit Down Gun. It was that one. Headlined by Mark Haskins versus Will Ospreay. There we go. Good memory, Darren. So yeah, they now send out these bigger and bigger arenas, and they're soon to play the Brixton Academy, which is a really big music venue in London. So it's progressing quite well.
It's going to be about 2,000 people, I believe, and I think that's coming up in September. And I know there's still some tickets available, but they are selling out rather quickly.
Yeah, it looks like for all intents and purposes they're going to have a sellout, and it is. Well, this is how big the product is. They routinely sell out their tickets for these, for the, at least for the Camden shows, almost immediately. In fact, the time I got my tickets, I had to be on the ball at 1 minute past 10 o'clock of the night, ready to go. And they sold out all the tickets for this. Again, I don't know exact numbers, but you could probably easily fit 300 to 400 people in this building.
Well, on this show, I think they talked about there being 700 people in the building, and it did certainly look like that.
Okay, well, again, they can sell that out easily in 20 minutes of the tickets going on sale. So it is a hard ticket to get a hold of. That's how popular they are. They've started to run other venues. They started to do Manchester. They're still yet to come to Birmingham because, you know, NXT didn't come here, and the WWE are now occasionally skipping us. Somebody in the wrestling world is pissed off at Birmingham, so... That's annoying.
No, there's a reason for that. No one wants to go to Birmingham. Anyways. Anyways, let's get into the show. We'll be starting from the beginning. We're going to be working our way through.
As is tradition, to start from the beginning.
As is tradition. But I do know that some people do prefer to go from the top, from the main event downwards. So we're going to break from tradition because we are British and we do things our own way.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. So the show started, and the first thing that struck me was the production. For an independent show, the lighting and the music and everything about the way that it was all set up straight away sort of hit me as, okay, we are independent, but we do have some nice sort of production qualities.
Yeah, they do. They at least at the Electric Ballroom in Camden, their kind of headquarters. Think of it as their equivalent of the ECW Arena. They are on top of everything there. It is a world-renowned music venue, so they do already have the professional lighting and stuff like that set up. But yeah, they do really stage this very, very well. I've seen a lot of crappy independent DVDs over the years where it seems like it's just been shot by, you know, some moron on an iPhone. This doesn't look like that. It's still noticeably indie, which I like. They haven't gone... You know, for really high production values, maybe at the cost of the talent or something else. But yeah, very nicely shot for an independent wrestling show.
Basically, what they've got, they do the best that they possibly can with, and that's fantastic.
Well, like I said, they do on these shows. I watched the previous one to this was in Manchester. The lighting was a bit off.
Yeah,
they it was either too bright or too dark. But here, yeah, perfect.
So, with that, Jim Smallman, who is one of the co-owners of Progress Wrestling, came out, and he's sort of a ring announcer slash, I would say, narrator. Is that... Do you think that's fair to say, Darren?
Yeah, I think that's fair. If you don't know about Jim Smallman, he's a stand-up comedian by trade. He's now become more famous for being a wrestling promoter, but I saw him. He was one of the warm-up acts for Mick Foley when I went to see Mick Foley's stand-up tour. And I think we just caught him on a bad night because he was really angry for some reason. At one point, even shouting at the audience for laughing at a joke.
Really?
It was really, yeah, and not like in a humorous way, like, no, you shouldn't be laughing at that, don't laugh at that. And I was like, okay, this is odd now. He's cheered up considerably since then, at least.
Well, that was the thing I was going to say. He's very, the way he comes across on these shows, and especially on this one, he's very personable. He makes sure he gets the crowd involved. He picks out particular people in the crowd and sort of has a bit of banter and a bit of a laugh with them. And you know, I think that gives it more of a personal feel. And I think that's what he's going for in this. So for you to say that's quite surprising, actually.
Yes, but again, we probably just caught him on an off night. Yeah. He's a great host for this type of show. He kicks off every show in this fashion. it gives the brand, it gives the first taste of what the Progress identity is.
Exactly, exactly. And it was at this point when he was in the ring that the camera panned around and you could just literally see that everywhere was packed. Every single corner of that building was packed. And it looked sweaty and hot, but at the same time it looked like a great atmosphere to watch a wrestling match.
I can confirm that it is indeed sweaty and hot in that building.
But at this point, Jim Smallman told us that Dave Mastiff would not be appearing on the show because he was because he was suffering from the flu, and Big Damo was also off the show because he had injured his head the night before, and I think he said something like 5 or 10 staples. I can't remember exactly how many staples he said he had in his head, but he wouldn't be able to compete that night. But he did announce the replacements, which we'll get to as we go through the match and go through the card. Sorry. So the first match was Damon Moser against Nathan Cruz. Now, Damon Moser, how much do you know about him, Darren?
Almost literally nothing, but I think that's because he's very much new to this scene.
Yes.
I may be wrong here, but I think he actually trained with Progress. He's a product of their wrestling school. Yes, that's right. But he, for me, what I couldn't shake is he looks like Macklemore if Macklemore grew up in East London. I couldn't shake the fact that he's almost the spitting image of Macklemore.
What struck me was that when he came out, the music was possibly the worst wrestling music, entrance music, I've ever heard in my entire life.
I like the whistling. The kind of crappy rap around it I could do there, but the whistling, I kind of like that.
Yeah, I was just...
Eon's better than the Origin.
It is indeed. But he came out to that music that I hate and Darren likes, and he got into the ring, and he took the house mic and basically said that he may have taken one too many headshots from a chair, but he wants to make this match a no DQ match. With that, he asked the boss, Jim Smallman, whether or not he consented to that, at which point Jim said, yep, let's go for it. So with that, then Nathan Cruz came out, and he was joined by a wrestler who I know Darren wants to talk about.
I have to explain Zach Gibson to anybody outside of the UK, because I don't think you're going to understand why I think he's a great heel. Because I love Zach Gibson because I so exquisitely hate Zach Gibson, right? Basically, people from outside the UK may hear the word Liverpool and they only think of one thing. They think of the Beatles.
No, they think of me.
Why would they? Oh, yes, because you live there. that aside, they think of the Beatles. Now, my hatred for the Beatles is something we can get onto another day. But what you may not know is that people from Liverpool, who are known as Scousers, are kind of the pantomime villain of the UK. Like, they're wonderful people. As most people from most places are, but outside of Liverpool, they tend to be booed just for the fact that they're from Liverpool, and they have a bit of an annoying accent. Again, I'm trying not to offend people from Liverpool here. To repeat myself, I met a lot of Scousers who are very great people, but...
And I work with a lot of nice Liverpoolians as well, I want to point that out.
So Zach Gibson plays into this by coming out and proclaiming himself in that accent to be Liverpool's number one. And that's why he's always talking at length, because just the sound of a Scouse accent is enough to rile up a London crowd. But, again, to really point out how much I love Zach Gibson, I don't know if this is by design or just something that's happened, but he walks to the ring to the song You Never Walk Alone, which is synonymous with Liverpool Football Club. It is their anthem, they sing it every single match, and it's a great song, it's a great football song. But Liverpool is also thought to be a place where a lot of people are on benefits. A higher number than average are on benefits from the government. The process of getting benefits is called signing on to the dole, the shorthand for which is sign on. So instead of singing, walk on with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone, they instead sing sign on with a pen in your hand, and you'll never get a job, you'll never get a job, which is just fantastic. And that's why I love to hate Zach Thompson.
And that's the thing, he plays into it as well. You know, that's the great thing about it. And as I said, he was accompanying Nathan Cruz, and they're part of the faction, the Origin, who are essentially... I think it's fair to say that they're northern, predominantly, and they try and get into the skin of the predominantly London crowd. And that's...
Well, I don't know about that, because I think only Zach Gibson is noticeably northern. I don't know where Nathan Cruz is from, but El Liguero's from Mexico, and Dave Mastiff's from the Midlands. Which I suppose is all north of London.
Yeah.
But then you're going to get me annoyed because you're calling Birmingham the north, which we aren't. We're in the middle.
Well, Nathan Cruz is from Hull, and El Liguero is actually from Leeds.
No, he's from Mexico.
he names himself a Mexican sensation, but he's actually from Leeds. I know we're breaking kayfabe somewhat there, but he is actually from Leeds.
So basically, they are Progress's version of the Decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Equally as random, equally as ineffective.
But they do generate some massive heel heat, which is exactly what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was around about this point when Nathan Cruz and Zach Gibson had got into the ring and Zach Gibson had riled up the crowd that we first heard from Glenn Joseph and RJ Singh on commentary. I know I've asked you to speak a lot, Darren, but what was your thoughts on Glenn Joseph and RJ Singh on commentary during this whole show?
They're fine for the most part, but when stuff starts to really get heated, they can be very screamy.
Yes.
To the point of annoyance and distraction, where they're just everything is, oh my god, that is the most devastating thing I've ever seen. They tend to dip into hyperbole quite a bit, and they haven't really got that, you know, how JR can go with the roller coaster and can build up and build up and build up and then knows when the payoff spot is. They tend to have 10 payoff spots of big shouty moments all the way through for every single match as well. So,
and that's the thing, yeah. It has diminishing returns in the end.
Exactly.
And the thing I found with them is that at the beginning of the match, they were very good at sort of setting up the backstory. If it hadn't been a video beforehand, they were good at explaining some of the history and why this match is actually happening. But then, as you said, they either sort of felt like they faded into the background, or they started screaming and distracting from what was going on in the ring. So there's obviously something to work there with them, you know, but I think it is something that needs to be worked on in regards to Progress Wrestling. So the first match was Damon Mosa against Nathan Cruz, which had been turned into a hardcore match. This match, I can't possibly go into every single thing that happens, but the highlights are essentially within, was it about 3 minutes, they went to a balcony area, which we found out was the VIP area, and Nathan Cruz tried to suplex Damon Mosa, which was blocked, but then Damon Mosa then pushed Nathan Cruz off the balcony into the front row of chairs. It was about this point that the commentators did actually give a pretty good background on the history between Mosa and Cruz, which was essentially that they were stablemates at one point, and that Mosa has been trying to get his hands on Cruz for the past year. At one point, Nathan Cruz had a table in his hand, and Mosa slid out of the ring, smashing the table right into Nathan Cruz's mouth, which just cut wide open. It was absolutely sick. There was a few things that wound me up, which we'll get into in a moment, namely the chairs to the head. They were semi-protected, but they were still chair shots to the head. There was a beautiful coast-to-coast, which Mosa hit on Cruz at one point. But the end of the match came. Cruz hits his signature spot, which I believe is the show stolen, through a table from the top rope, which Mosa kicked out for a near fall. But then Gibson climbed into the ring with some cable ties and tied Mosa's hands behind his back, to at which point Nathan Cruz and Zach Gibson hit the concerto. A pretty safe looking one in all fairness, but it allowed Cruz to get the 1-2-3, and the match went about 20 minutes. At this point the commentators did say that, and they did say this and it was quite logical, that Mosa may have caused his own downfall. Cruz and Gibson left the ring, and Mosa eventually had his hands untied, and he left to a round of applause. Darren, your thoughts on the match?
I thought it was a good match for the most part. I like the intensity they brought. Yes. But having said that, this is kind of the par for the course for the night. There was a lot of good here, but also some pitfalls of varying degrees. For example, I think we could have done with a video package before this match started. I know that as an indie company, they can't afford to have video packages for everything. But because it's such an apparently a storied history between these two, and they also included, you know, things from their past gimmick as the Faceless Men. I don't know. They did some weird anonymous deal a few months ago involving these two, apparently. And they didn't go into detail with that, and I was kind of lost in that shuffle. The other thing that annoyed me, one of the other things that annoyed me was the part where Nathan Cruz hit his finisher off the top rope through a table. So he essentially hit the triple deluxe version of his finisher, and it was kicked out of. That finisher is now worthless.
Yeah.
Utterly and completely worthless. If a finisher is done off the top rope or through a table, it should be the end of a match. No question. If it's done off the top rope through a table and someone kicks out of it, it's garbage. That should be thrown away. I know this is the indies, but, you know, have some standards at least. One spot you didn't point out that I did like was when Moser was tied to the top rope. I think it was with cables or something. He was, or sellotape. Something was attaching him to the top rope. Nathan Cruz came over to him, but Damien Moser hit his knee trembler finish.
Yes.
But Nathan Cruz was so far away that he couldn't get to him to pin him. That was quite a unique spot. I don't think I've ever seen that before. But as you alluded to when you were talking, the chair shots were so ugly and so unnecessary.
That's the exact word I was going to use, unnecessary, because this was a good match, you know, and I was really into it until the moment that they hit each other with the chair shots to the head. There was some element protection. They did sort of get their hands up, but at the same time, their heads did take most of the impact, and it kind of made me think, at what point did they think this was a great idea? You know, I understand, as you said, this is the indies, but at the same time, they should be setting the standard in a strange sort of way, because WWE are the big company. They obviously have banned it, but it's the bigger independent groups that essentially set the standard for everyone beneath them. So if Progress Wrestling are seen to be able to have unprotected chair shots, then the other companies are going to have to do the same to keep up. And I just think that really put a bit of a dampener on this match for me.
It really, like, I know you said they were semi-protected, but that's flimsy. Because, yes, they put their hands up, but they were swinging them with some force.
Oh, yeah.
That no amount of putting your hands in front of your face is going to protect you from the really bad brain damage that we now know happens as an account of these chair shots. They should be left in the garbage fire that is CCW, where they belong, not here. Yeah, that really did bring this match down several notches. I'd be interested to see them go at it again, but I'd much prefer it to be a straight singles match.
Yeah, and that sort of alludes to my final point, was the fact that although this was a no DQ match, and we know that Nathan Cruz and Zach Gibson are master heels, Zach Gibson, like a good little boy, stood outside the ring for most of the match.
Yeah, that was bizarre as well.
You know, if they'd come up with some reason, I can't think off the top of my head what they could have used. If they'd come up with some reason saying that Nathan Cruz had said to Zach, "Listen, I've got this. I don't need your help," then, you know, I could have given it a pass. But they didn't even bother to try to explain that. And then the fact that Zach Gibson was instrumental, essentially, in the finish of the match, kind of makes you think, well, why didn't he do this earlier on?
Exactly, and he had another match later on in the show, so there really was no need for Zach Gibson to be out there. It did detract from the match, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I think it's a pass, but with issues for the very first match that we're reviewing for Progress.
Very big issues, but yes, ultimately a pass.
So the second match of the night then was TK Cooper with Dahlia Black versus Jack Sexsmith. Oh, dear me. Right. First of all, TK Cooper and Black came out and they made out on the stage and then proceeded to make out in the ring and get quite hot and heavy at one point on in the middle of the ring. We were told that they are known as the South Pacific Couple. This then led to I Touched Myself playing over the loudspeakers, and out came Jack Sexsmith. Now, I'm for full disclosure, it was the first ever time I had ever seen Jack Sexsmith, and am I too far away from saying he's an adult version of Dalton Castle mixed in with Cheeseburger?
Wow, that is a very accurate description of Zack Sexsmith. I did put in my notes, isn't it weird that although for years they were heels, now it seems that all effeminate men are now automatic baby faces, and that is fantastic.
Yes, very much so. I don't know what to do with that, so I'm just going to carry on with the match.
That's fine.
But on to your point, the crowd did actually chant after Jack Sexsmith's entrance. That was awesome. And the reason I wanted to make a note of this was because the reaction from TK Cooper was just spot on. He just looked at the crowd as if they were off their heads, which is exactly what you'd expect a heel to do. And I just found that really, 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 really good. But the bell went as Jack Sexsmith was still playing to the crowd, and he was immediately attacked. Essentially, the story of this match was that TK Cooper was on offense for the majority of the match, with Jack Sexsmith getting the occasional hope spot. At one point, there was a great spot where TK Cooper essentially threw Jack straight up in the air and then turned that into a Samoan drop, which I thought was fantastic. On one of the occasions that Jack Sexsmith was in control, the commentators talked about Mr. Cocko, and I was thinking, oh God, what's this going to be? And we found out later on that Mr. Cocko is actually a condom, which he keeps in his trunks. Not making this up. The first time that he introduced Mr. Cocko, it ended up with TK Cooper hitting a beautiful scissors kick to the back of Jack Sexsmith's head, which was impressive. At one point, the referee was distracted by Delia Black at ringside. This allowed Jack Sexsmith to introduce the second Mr. Cocker, which he took from his anus area, shall we say. And before he could use it, however, Travis Banks, who is a fellow New Zealander, came in and attacked Jack from behind and hit a brainbuster. When the referee turned around, Jack Sexsmith was just getting back to his feet and he was punched to the back of the head, which was resulted in the 1-2-3 in roughly 13 minutes. The commentator speculated whether this meant that the South Pacific team had been created as opposed to just the South Pacific couple. Darren, what was your impression of this match?
I'd probably go so far as to say this is my least favourite match on the card.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start off immediately by saying I think TK Cooper has a lot of raw talent that I'm liking the look of. But the Mr. Cocko thing might be the most vile, disgusting, cheap, shameful thing I've ever seen on a wrestling show.
Yeah, it was cheap comedy, not just cheap heat. It was just like, oh God, really?
But this wasn't funny. It was like, imagine if you had taken somebody to this wrestling show for their first show, and in the second match, a man pulls a condom out of his trunks and puts it on his hand and attempts to attack somebody with it. Like, it really did make my skin crawl. And also, what's disturbing is that TK Cooper, obviously another, sexually charged character, and he's got Dahlia Black, so they're clearly going for some BDSM thing. His finishing move is a donkey punch.
Yes, but I did think it was effective. I did like the fact the way it was sold. Jack Sexsmith literally was knocked out, or he sold it that way anyway.
Yeah, but he throws a good punch, but he's still a donkey punch. And that's weird coming from a man who looks like Bruno Mars.
The crowd did actually chant at one point, give us a song, Bruno. Bruno, give us a song, sorry. Fantastic. But yeah, this was my least favourite match of the night. They are both Pro Joe graduates, which is the Progress development sort of program. So you know, it was great to see them. I don't particularly like the interference from Travis Banks, but again, that's my personal preference. I do understand why it happened, and it will set up sort of a continuation of this feud down the line. But Jack Sexsmith, I was really into him when he first came out, but during the match, he lost me, especially with that Mr. Cocker. I just that was just so indie. And again, I know we are reviewing an indie show, but at the same time, that's, as you said, that's exactly the sort of gimmick that will turn the casual fan off.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Just horrible.
They did have a video package for this, which was great way of setting up the history. Essentially, Ginny was in charge of Laura DiMatteo. Laura DiMatteo was, if you will, sort of Virgil-type character to a Ted DiBiase and Ginny. And they played up their history, what happened in their breakup, and they also had sit-down interviews with both, where they basically said, we're going to destroy each other. And it was well set up, and it was a nice introduction to the feud.
Yes, and I do appreciate this video package. Ginny came across great. Laura DiMatteo may be the worst promo of all time.
But do you think that might have something to do with the language barrier? Because she is from Milan in Italy.
And unfortunately, she's not the daughter of Roberto DiMatteo, which made me very sad. But yeah, maybe, but I mean, she was so flat. I was like, this is meant to be a fiery feud, and she has fire. She showed it in the ring, but yeah. Oh my God, was she awful.
Well, that's the thing. That's what makes me think that perhaps it's more of a language issue, that she's not quite there in terms of being able to express herself properly in English. And as you said, during the actual match, she showed some tremendous fire. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. This was one of my matches of the night. There was one spot which I just thought was absolutely beautiful. Ginny was on the outside, and Laura DiMatteo was on the apron. She wrapped her legs around Ginny's head and then drove it into the mat. Laura climbed back into the ring and hit what I can only describe as the most beautiful suicide dive I've seen in a very long time. They also laid the shots into each other big time. They were not holding back at all during this match. Another thing that I really liked about this match was the fact that the commentators sat out a lot of the match, or at least I didn't hear them as pronounced as I did in other matches. They basically let the action speak. And you could tell that this was a heated feud. There was so much on the line for both women, and you could tell that they actually felt that. There was a wonderful trading of submissions through a seesaw sort of spot. Ginny hit a Styles Clash on Laura DiMatteo, and she also hit the X Factor on Laura. And each time the near falls were just absolutely beautiful. They had me on the edge of my seat. The end of the match was a bit sloppy. Laura was placed on the top rope. She rolled over the top of Ginny and rolled her over for a three count. It looked a bit sloppy. I don't know exactly what they were going for, but it just didn't look quite right. So yeah, Laura DiMatteo beat Ginny via pinfall. After the match, before Laura could get to her feet, Ginny started a beatdown. Security ran in to try and pull them apart, and they could possibly be the worst security I've ever seen. They basically stopped Ginny from going towards Laura, and then all of a sudden decided to turn their back on her and allowed Ginny to get a few more shots in. Ginny started to walk up the ramp with the crowd chanting, "She's just too good for you." And Laura grabbed the mic and said, "This is not over. You're going to have to effing kill me." What were your thoughts on the match, Dan? Were you as high on it as I am?
I think it's kind of mirrored the first match in that I like the intensity they brought. They really did. I think Laura DiMatteo's main problem was that her facials were sometimes not great. She would look a bit blank, or she'd undersell things, but when everything was running on all cylinders, it was great. There were some really nice athletes, and I really liked Ginny as a heel. She really impressed me in this match. I think if I'm going to come away with anything, it's that Ginny was just a fantastic heel. But yeah, the spot on the top rope where Laura DiMatteo twice missed her foot on the top rope, and that was very awkward. And the finish coming from a roll-up, it felt like, because they showed it in the video package that DiMatteo had a win over Ginny, it felt like this should have been Ginny's to win before a third match, and the post-match beatdown just adds credence to that for me. But I did enjoy it. There were, again, plus points, and nowhere near the pitfalls of the first match, I will say that. I much preferred it to the opening match.
Thing is, the first match, we sort of torn apart slightly because of some of the idiotic moments, such as the chair shots. There's nothing like that here. You know, we've also got to remember that these are sort of women who are not as experienced as what we've been accustomed to over the last couple of years. So I'm willing to give them more of a pass in that sort of sense. I do completely agree with you that Ginny should have got the win here. I think she should have got the win through some sort of heel tactic. To be honest, the line by Laura saying this is not over, you're gonna have to effing kill me, didn't really make much sense when you think about it, because she won the match, so she's got nothing to prove. Yeah, okay, she got a beat down, but at the same time, it just didn't sort of ring true considering how the match actually went. But overall, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I came into it with low expectations, and I came away quite impressed. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next no pun intended, the next chapter of this feud.
Yeah, I can agree with pretty much everything you said. I look forward to seeing what Ginny does next.
So up next, Jim Smallman came back into the ring and he talked about the dual promotion that they're doing with Smash Wrestling out of Canada in September, which I really hope is actually going to be on the on-demand service. That should be a good show to watch. With that, the Smash Wrestling champion Johnny Gargano came out for an open challenge. It was at this point that the commentators, for absolutely no reason whatsoever, told us that Johnny Gargano had been the champion for 427 days, which really should have been the hint that of what was to come. It's worth noting that the crowd absolutely adored Johnny Gargano as he's coming out, chanting Johnny Wrestling, and basically loving the fact that he was there. However, when his opponent was introduced, which was Mark Haskins, they went bananas. They absolutely went bonkers. They love Mark Haskins in progress. For those who don't know, Mark Haskins is an absolute rising star, and he's actually just been added to the Battle of Los Angeles for PWG, I believe, Darren.
Yeah, he had a brief stint in TNA, I think. I can't remember what he was doing, but he talked a bit. I've actually talked to him. He was, anyway. Quite the stalwart of my local indie company for a while. And he was in TNA for, I don't know if it was a few years, but for a little while. He had to leave because his wife was pregnant. He wanted to be home with his son. But yeah, he's gone through a bit of a gimmick change where he was kind of the show-off cocky heel, but now he's been like the hardest working man in wrestling gimmick. And yeah, they have taken to him like almost nobody else in progress. And in a lot of places, he's now kind of one of, not the biggest star in the UK, because that's clearly Zack Sabre Jr., yeah. But he's starting to enter the conversation.
Oh, definitely, and the crowd absolutely loved him here, and they were totally into this match the whole way through. The match began, and there was some nice combo wrestling between the two. There was absolutely beautiful, some absolutely beautiful stuff. The crowd started chanting, Hastings is on fire, Johnny Wrestling's terrified, which... for those who don't know, it goes to the tune of a song called Freed. Is it Freed of Desire or Freed by Desire?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it's one or the other, but it's a 90s tune, so I should really remember it. But it's quite big at the moment. It's quite big in all the soccer games at the moment. But they were having some good fun with that. Basically, the story of the match was Gargano was being a cocky heel. He managed to turn a crowd who 5 minutes before had been absolutely loving him into absolutely hating him, but with his cockiness, he was taking Haskins quite lightly, but Haskins was countering absolutely everything that was being thrown at him. At one point, he sat Haskins down on a fan's lap at ringside, and then played to the crowd, and then went to go for a dive, but Haskins got up and kicked him in the face, which I thought was a lovely spot. There was a moment in the middle of the match where they just started pounding on each other, absolutely pounding on each other, and it was a great visual. Possibly my favourite part of the whole entire match was Gargano hitting a super kick on Haskins for the nearest of near falls, and the look on Gargano's face, he just crawled to the corner in absolute shock, and the camera went straight into his face, and he sold it absolutely beautifully. At one point, Gargano had the crossface on Haskins, and the crowd was chanting, "Please don't tap." They were so into this match. The ending came when Gargano went for a Gargano escape, but Haskins rolled through to apply the star armbar to win the Smash Championship. I didn't get a time because I was just too absorbed in this match, but the crowd went absolutely ballistic. They were absolutely loving the fact that they'd seen this title change. Haskins celebrated in the crowd, and they were just on their feet. They were absolutely loving this. Gargano grabbed the belt, but then he climbed back into the ring. He grabbed the mic and got the crowd back on side by saying things like, on his bucket list was coming to Progress Wrestling, and he's finally been able to do it. He mentioned Tommaso Ciampa, not by name, but he alluded to him and said that Tommaso had said that they were the best fans in the world, and after this he has to agree. He put over Haskins as someone people should know about before then handing him the belt. I've got in my notes, this was just a beautiful moment and a beautiful match. Darren, before I start talking lyrically about this match, what how did you feel about it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm also going to speak quite highly of this match, so sorry to steal your thunder a little
That's
bit.
That's okay.
I go so far as to say this was the best match of the night,
definitely,
for me, at least. Because, not to kind of besmirch the previous three matches, but this felt like a pro wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
Two people at the absolute top of their game who know exactly what they're doing, worked that crowd beautifully, and gave the people what they wanted to see. I know, obviously, having the title change booked before the match is helpful, but I still feel they would have had a equally as great reaction at the end had Johnny Gargano retained.
Yeah.
Because he said they weren't against Johnny Gargano, but he started to turn them a little bit by being a little bit cocky. Brutal back at the end, by the way, with a great post-match promo as well. But, mm-hmm, yeah, this just... The only thing I didn't like was the spitting, because I just don't... Like, that's just gross. I don't need that in my life. I also, as I've got on record many times of saying, I don't like when baby faces slap people. That is a heel thing to do, is just to slap people right in the face. If it's like slapping at the chest or slapping to slap yourself up, that's fine. But to openly just slap people, that's not what baby faces do.
No.
That's a pet peeve of mine, but other than that, a fantastic, beautifully fluid match.
Yeah. As for the spitting, I completely agree. My own personal taste, I don't like spitting. What I think they were going for was, I think Gargano was trying to come across as more of a heel. I think he was trying to get as much heat as he possibly could, knowing what was going to happen later on, and the fact that the crowd were obviously into Haskins. I think Haskins spitting back was the natural thing to do in a strange sort of way. As again, it's not to my taste, but I can sort of see what they were trying to do there. Everything about this match, apart from the spitting, I thoroughly enjoyed. Everything was just fluid. Everything was just crisp. I don't usually get out of my seat when I'm watching wrestling anymore, because I've just seen so much. But this had me right on the edge, and at some points I was standing up just watching it going, whoa, that was just beautiful. I haven't seen a match like this for a long time, and it really, really got my wrestling love juices going.
It really was great, and capped off by one of two great title moments on this show.
Yes. Yes, very much so. So after this wonderful, beautiful match, they had the intermission, which I think allowed the crowd to just calm down slightly. We came back, and Jim Smallman was back in the ring. He introduced the Shield Tag Champions, London Riot. I think I need to explain that. Basically, the Tag Champions don't actually have straps. They have a shield, which is split in two. And both men have a part of the shield for themselves. I'm not sold on this, Darren. What about you?
I've literally written, I'm not sold on the shield tag team. Because the thing is, they never really put them together.
No.
So, like, to actually make the shield, like, the referee doesn't usually hold them together to before the match. The champions themselves don't hold them together. So it just essentially looks like they're carrying around two massive apostrophes everywhere they go.
Or commas, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, or commas. It just, it doesn't look great, but it's different at least. It's better than having a crappy tag belt. If they had good tag belts, then I'd maybe be annoyed. But yeah, have you seen any of the progress shows from early on when they had the staff as their world title?
I didn't actually know.
They had like this big, I'm just going to say, Nazi-esque like staff that the champion would carry around. They've since replaced it with the belt, thankfully. But yeah, it was a very odd looking like totem thing that they'd have to carry around. And quite a few people pointed out that it was quite Nazi, so thankfully they got rid of it. But it's a big black staff with the big eagle on the top, and
it's
for obvious reasons they eventually phased it out.
Morbid curiosity now means I'm going to have to go back and have a quick look see if I agree with what people were saying at the time.
Yeah, go, because by the time I went to the Progress show, Will Ospreay had the belt.
Right.
But yeah, I've seen the staff and it's odd looking.
I'm quite glad that you don't quite get the Shield thing as well, because I thought maybe it was just a young thing that I didn't quite get. But the other thing that bothered me was the fact that it looks like something from Toys R Us.
Yeah, it's a bit, part of one of the Shields actually fell off. Like the foot of the eagle on one of the big apostrophes has actually fell off. And I was like, that's not good. Because I also can't make my mind up about the London Riots. I know we didn't see him wrestle here, but I've seen them quite a few times. And I don't know. They strike me as just, they're just big lads that have just give wrestling a go. It doesn't feel like, it's hard to explain, but they just haven't clicked with me yet.
I know what you mean. And in a strange way, they kind of remind me of who their opponents were, or who their opponents are going to be, sorry, in Chapter 33, which was announced here, which is...
Don't you dare compare them to War Machine.
Well, from your description in terms of two big men who haven't quite clicked with me...
Okay, but I wouldn't say that they don't seem like wrestlers. And like,
no.
Let's all calm down.
Maybe you were going to have a virtual punch-up then, weren't we? No, I just mean in terms of just a tag team, two big men who don't seem to have really clicked with the crowds and don't really seem to have people with strong emotions either way for them. But, yeah, their opponents for Chapter 33, and the whole point of this segment, was to announce that at Chapter 33 it's going to be War Machine against the London Riots for the tag shields. It should be an interesting match. I'm quite looking forward to that.
Yeah, I imagine that's going to be fine. But again, as you've said, War Machine have yet to really have a classic match, at least in the last 12 months. Since they've been given the ROH tag title, I know they're not champions anymore, but ever since then, they've just not really been able to have that kind of great match that I know they can have.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing. But we're moving into ROH territory now. I think we're going to keep it on progress. My fault, sorry.
We'll get out of that.
Yes. So up next was a Atlas competition match. Now, the Atlas competition is essentially... it's going to be a new division in progress, and it's essentially for the wrestlers who are over 205 pounds. What they're doing at the moment is that they're having like a round-robin sort of tournament where there's two groups of four who are competing against each other for points. Now, the matches I've got a 15-minute time limit, and they get 2 points for winning the match, and if it goes to the 15-minute time limit, it's 1 point for the draw. Now, I know it seems quite convoluted, with me saying that. Now, imagine that being said by commentators who you can barely hear. That's what happened here, and I actually had to go back and look it up online to find out exactly what it was all about. What I really wanted here was them to have some sort of... graphics showing the actual table to show where we actually were at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. It was very oddly organised. And in fact, the entire tournament idea was a bit oddly organised because they can have tag matches between each other and then singles matches. There's no definitive format other than they're in a group and matches will happen.
Yeah, and it gets even more convoluted and complicated by the fact that Dave Mastiff was supposed to be in this match, but he was replaced by Zach Gibson, who was teaming with T-Bone, and they were facing Yestin Harris and Big Daddy Walter. What was it, before you actually get into the match, What do you think about we know about your love for Zach Gibson, but the other three guys in this match, what are your thoughts on them?
First and foremost, I'm surprised that Yeston Rees isn't Welsh.
Yeah, he's from Gloucester.
Because I saw that name and thought that is the most Welsh-looking name I've ever seen outside of Tom Jones. So I was like, he's definitely Welsh. Then he wasn't. Big Daddy Walter, as they always pronounce him as, it's never Walter, they always give it the European pronunciation.
Sorry. Well, he is from Austria, so I suppose that is the proper pronunciation, it's just my ignorance.
He's fine. I saw him wrestle Dave Mastiff on the last show, and he was okay. I can't really get a real grasp of him. And T-Bone, I've never really been impressed by T-Bone. I've seen him live a few times, and he's just kind of there. He's like, oh, T-Bone. Yay.
Well, he usually teams with Rampage Brown in PCW for Team Single, and because the crowd always chants Dirty Leeds at them, I always assumed that T-Bone was from Leeds, but he's from sort of around your sort of neck of the woods, sort of, in Malvern, which is a town I actually went to last week, strangely enough.
Well, there we go. Well, I always thought he was Irish, because I swear I've heard somebody say that he's like, he has a gypsy gimmick going on.
I that
like
see
he's
that.
Some bare-knuckle boxer type guy, but yeah, if he's from Malvern, that's not really the case, I don't think.
No, but yeah, so before the match, Zach Gibson got onto the mic, and he essentially repeated his promo from earlier. It was at this point that we heard the song that Darren sang earlier on, which, please, Darren, don't sing again.
Oh, please, let me.
No.
Okay.
But he essentially did exactly the same promo, saying that he is Liverpool's number one wrestler. He's soon to be the UK's number one best wrestler. Soon to be the European number one wrestler. Soon to be the number one world wrestler. And the amount of heat that he was getting, you alluded to it earlier on, Darren, it is just phenomenal.
Vicky Guerrero would stop and say, my God, listen to that heat. That's how much Zach Gibson was able to generate. Just by using the word recognized, he was able to make all of London hate him.
Oh, I loved your impression of Scouser.
I can't do accents. It's not part of the act. But yeah, just the word recognized is enough to make... He just says the same thing. He's basically doing an anti-Enzo Amore. He always says the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's just nuclear heat. But it's not go-away heat,
no.
I don't think.
No.
It's not like they're booing him because they want rid of him. They're booing him because they genuinely hate him. And that's why Zach Gibson is a fantastic heel.
And by the way, you do a good Birmingham accent.
Thanks. Cheers.
But yeah, as I said, this is a match for the Atlas Championship points. Zach Gibson was standing in for Dave Mastiff. They started off with shoulder charges, which essentially was overdone, I think it's safe to say. But there was a nice dropkick from Volta at one point. He's a big, big man. And for him to get up that high, I was very, very impressed. The commentators did actually put it well and describe this match. It was hard-hitting, big man wrestling, but athletic, which I thought was a really good description. The ending actually came, and I've got a lot to say about this, because it's one of my personal pet peeves, but T-Bone came in to break up a pin on Gibson, but then was suddenly the legal man. Yeston Rees went for a suplex on T-Bone, but Gibson came back in the ring, kicked away the legs of Rees while he had T-Bone in the air, and scored the pin that way. Before I bring you back in, Darren, I'm just going to just rant about this. I don't understand how difficult it is to keep track of who the legal man is. Now, I understand that they wanted the end of the match to be that Gibson snuck back in, even though he's the legal man, and kick Yeston's knee and get the pin that way. But the referee at no point was trying to get T-Bone out of the ring. He wasn't gesturing to say, you're not the legal man, get out. He wasn't telling Yeston Rees he's not the legal man or anything like that. It was just... It just seemed badly organized to me.
I can get with that, but I must admit I didn't notice. Right. I don't know if that you're paying more attention or I was distracted, but I hadn't even realised that. It is
one of my biggest pet peeves. I always look for it in terms of keeping consistency with a legal man, because I think from the way I watch wrestling, it's very important, and it is one of my pet peeves. So I guess I could have just been noticing it and got annoyed a lot by it because of that.
I have many pet peeves, Hayden, it's okay. Babyface is slapping anybody saying that he got hit in the skull, which it can't happen. You know, he got hit in the head, yes, but unless he peeled back his skin and muscle, he didn't get hit in the frigging skull. the thing that got me about this match was the entirety of the focus, and in fact the win, went to the one man who's not in the Atlas tournament.
Yeah.
It was so odd. This happened on the last show as well, in that they had a replacement step in. It was Mikey Whiplash. Thank God he wasn't on the show, because then I would have had to swear as well. But he stepped in for a match last time round, another tag match, and he was the entire focus of the match there. So it's very odd that they don't seem to be giving much attention to the actual people in the tournament. But Zach Gibson entertained me throughout this match, so I can't even complain. It was a nice change of pace to have the big lad wrestling match here. Considering the come down we had to have following the high flying, fast paced Gargano and Haskins match.
Yeah.
Nice change of pace, and I just love watching Zach Gibson annoy Cockneys. It's fantastic.
And I gotta be honest, I was quite impressed with Big Daddy Volta. He's not, you know, a world beater type wrestler, but from what he did, I was quite entertained. Yestyn Rees, despite, as you said, having a Welsh name, I just find him really bland. Really, really bland. I saw him wrestle in a PCW event back tail end of last year, and I think he's facing Rhino, if I remember rightly. And I was more entertained by the crowd singing Freddie Mercury songs at him because of his mustache, as opposed to anything that he did in the ring. And it was the same here. He just seems quite bland. He's got the nice look, but the actual content is not great.
I agree. But the King of Bland is on his way in the next match, so I'll hold fire.
So the next match is Rampage Brown was facing Trent Seven. This match had to be changed from the original schedule card because Damo O'Connor got injured, as we said at the top of the show. So although this was originally supposed to be an Atlas tournament match, between Rampage Brown and Damo O'Connor, because O'Connor couldn't make the match, Rampage Brown won the points by default. Again, we needed a graphic to show where this meant, what this meant for the league tables, but I've already ranted about that. So Trent Seven was brought in as a replacement. This is essentially just an exhibition match, so there was no backstory to it. It was probably the shortest match in the night. It was an entertaining match. There was a lot of suplexes, which caused a suplex city chant, which made me lose slight respect for the Progress crowd, but that's just me. There was a nice spot where Rampage Brown was standing by the ring post, and Trent Seven came along, tried to hit a chop. Rampage Brown ducked, and you could just hear the bone smashing against the ring post. It sounded painful, but you know it was. There was a few moments where there wasn't enough selling, as far as I was concerned. They hit quite a lot of suplexes on each other, as I said earlier, but then they kept getting up, and the opponent would hit the suplex on the person who just suplexed them. But then they did sell it after about 2 minutes that they were both exhausted from having to get up from taking the suplexes, which, you know, sort of countered the no-selling, I suppose. The end of the match came when Rampage Brown hit a pile driver to finish. It was only a five-minute match. It was just an exhibition. It was just a nice little match, Darren.
It was fine. I will say that I find Rampage Brown so very dull.
Yeah,
he's just a nice smiley gentleman from Leeds, and he kind of hits hard, but he's so vanilla to me. Like, I cannot get excited about a Rampage Brown match. Fun fact: whatever year Batista won the Royal Rumble, I think that was 3 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. I watched that Royal Rumble with Trent Seven.
Oh, did you know?
Yes, he owns my local wrestling promotion, Fight Club Pro, and he and another wrestler, MK McKinnon, we kind of know, because, you know, we go to the same pub after the show. We've talked to him a few times. So me and my friend, two friends actually, were sat in a pub watching the Royal Rumble live, and Trent Seven and MK McKinnon turned up, so we watched it with them. We disagreed about something, but I can't remember what it was.
Excellent. Well, Trent Seven was listed as being from a cabin on Mustache Mountain, so does that mean you live on Mustache Mountain?
Unfortunately not. I wish I did. Yeah, he's local. His name is after two rivers that are in the West Midlands, and he weighs in at Hench, which always gets a laugh out of me. He does have this annoying tendency. He's done this with Dave Mastiff, and I'm about to throw Dave Mastiff under the bus, unfortunately for the bus. But and you know my love of Dave Mastiff,
yes.
But I don't know whether it's he or Trent Seven that has this idea that extended, like, slap chop segments are great. And I swear to, he once did this with Dave Mastiff where they did the kind of chest chops for a good solid 2 minutes straight.
Oh my God.
It was insulting at the end, to the point I was just shouting, just try something else. But no, they were just, they kind of got into it here. The pacing was off with me. This is my problem with this match, in that they go hell for leather, you know, suplex, 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 massive chop, dead. And then 10 seconds later, be up again, chop, 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 slap. And it didn't really suit the style of match they were going for. I was looking for hard-hitting, you know, high-impact stuff instead of, you know, it was kind of paced like a cruiserweight match. But almost too unbelievably that, like, so you're dead now. You've both hit each other with five suplexes in a row. You're absolutely KO'd on the mat. And then within 10 seconds, you're reversing and throwing with suplexes again and clotheslines and everything, so pacing was off for me. I know they had a shorter match, they had more to get in, but yeah, I wasn't too high on this match, let's say.
Yeah, what struck me was the fact that, as you said, Rampage Brown is a big guy, he's very intimidating, he looks intimidating. As you said, he can come across as a bit bland, but we'll put that aside for the moment. But Trent Seven isn't exactly matching in terms of height and the way he looks, and I just felt that he didn't sell as much as he should have for Rampage Brown's offense. I think some of Rampage Brown's offense, when he's hitting you with chops and he's hitting you with suplexes, this should be more selling, and for me it just felt that Rampage Brown looked a little bit weaker coming out of this match than he did going in.
I can see where you're coming from. I don't think there's that much of a disparity between the two. That they haven't booked Rampage Brown to be a monster, at least as far as I know. He's not booked to be, you know, an absolute killer.
No.
So I can. That wasn't my problem with this match, but I can see where you're coming from.
I guess in my mind, I'm just booking Rampage Brown the way I think he should be booked, as opposed to analysing the way that he is used in progress. So yeah, you have got a fair point there. So we moved on then to the main event. Which was for the Progress title. Now, I do need to say, we have mentioned the title belt in a roundabout way before, but I think it's a sweet-looking title.
Yes, it is. It's got a nice design to it, and again, much better than the staff.
Yeah.
The staff was unique, but it just had connotations they didn't need.
Yeah, by the sounds of it, it conjured up images and thoughts like, you really shouldn't be thinking at a wrestling show. The story of this match, it was Marty Scurll against Tommy End. Now, this was actually the third match between the two. A video package was set up, and again, it was a nice, unique-looking video package that told the story that in the first match that they had, Tommy End knocked out Marty to earn a title match. In the actual title match, in the second match, Tommy End was cheated out of winning by Mikey Whiplash. I think it was on Chapter 29 when he had Marty beat and Mikey ran in and cost him the match. So this was the third match in essentially the trilogy, if you want to call it that. And as I said, there was an excellent video package which described all of the above. They also mentioned the fact that Tommy End had to win the Super Strong Style 16 tournament, which they held on Chapter 31. Everything was set up for this match going into it. I thought for both the entrances, both the entrances are visually great, but I thought this was the best production in terms of the actual of anything on this card.
I agree, but I must say I don't like Marty Scurll's new music. His previous music was really, really good and cool. I think he changed it because he went from being a babyface to being a heel.
Yeah.
But yeah, this kind of weird, mournful, slow song. It was very odd. But yeah, production-wise, very nice.
And with the carrying of the umbrella and the music, it just brings up, for some reason in my head, brings up thoughts of Jeff Hardy, which after this week is not a good thing.
No. Don't compare Marty Scurll, the UK's premier heel, to Willow of all people.
I'm just simply saying that with the music and the umbrella, it just conjured up images. I quickly moved them away, but at the same time, that did cross my mind. I did want to bring that up. So I'm not going to go through all this match because the actual meat and bones of this match was the last 5 minutes, essentially. As you can imagine, most of the match was well wrestled between both men. Both are tremendous, talented wrestlers, and it was some good stuff going back and forth. But at one point, there was a ref bump, which meant that Marty Scurll took his umbrella and hit Tommy End with it in the head. He then used the umbrella to aid a submission scenario, which then led to the referee calling for the bell. Jim Smallman, who was at ringside at this point, questioned the outcome and insisted that the match be restarted. They wrestled for a couple more minutes, and then the lights went off, which the commentators pointed out is Mickey Whiplash's MO, but when they came back on, there was no sign of him. Marty used that distraction to hit a low blow on Tommy End, and that was the 1-2-3 with his legs on the rope to aid the pinfall. At ringside, Jim looked disgusted, but obviously he didn't restart the match again. Tommy End got up and hit a beautiful spinning kick, which knocked Marty out cold. Before we actually get into what happened after that, Darren, what did you think of the match?
I really enjoyed, this was second only to, I think, Gargano and Haskins.
Yes.
Both men, like I said, Marty Scurll, I can't even remember, I don't know how to say his last name. I always say Scurll, but it's kind of spelled Skirl.
I kind of say it as if I'm just about to say Squirrel. Squirrel.
I'll stick with Scurll. Whatever your flavour of pronouncing Marty's last name, he probably is the premier heel right now in the UK.
Yes.
For obvious reasons, when he was in the first British boot camp, he was doing like a party boy gimmick, and I'd never really got it. But ever since he's made the change to the villain, it's been a great aesthetic change, a great gimmick change, a great in-ring change. Other than the little spin he does before he does chicken wings, I could do without that. But great unique look. Tommy End's fantastic. He is one of the top talents in Europe right now. It is a master of when, not if, that he's going to NXT. I think he's actually wrapping up indie dates right now so that he can join NXT when they have their next big batch of people, which is probably coming up soon. Probably post Cruiserweight Champion Classic will have the call up, and I expect Tommy End to be the star name in that group. He's awesome. He's got a questionable taste in tattoos because they're all varying degrees of crap. Like the main offender is the shark that he has, which kind of is a cool picture. Like he has a shark jumping out of water, but he can't distract from the fact that the shark's nose points to and he's only centimeters away from his nipple. So it looks like the shark is attempting to eat Tommy End's nipple.
Darren, I'm fully convinced that you would be the only person who would notice and think of that.
Agreed, but now, whenever you see a Tommy End match, you are not going to be able to unsee the fact that the shark is diving for his nipple. But yeah, he's fantastic. I can't wait for him to get to NXT. And it was a really enjoyable match. The only thing that, the kind of leap of logic that happened at the end, where Jim Smallman's okay to restart it because of the use of the umbrella, but not okay to start it even though he's blatantly seen Marty Scurll put his feet on the ropes.
Yeah.
That's baffling. Like, why didn't you just restart the match again? Now you're kind of screwing your own logic of having, you know, your commissioner ringside for all these matches. Why didn't you restart all the other matches with cheating, etc., etc., etc.? But yeah, that aside, really, really enjoy this match.
Yeah, no, definitely. And obviously the cheating and the heel gimmicks to end the essentially the two falls of this match were set up for what happened next, which was after Tommy Ennis hit the spinning kick and knocked Marty out cold, and the Pastor William Evers music hit. Now, the Pastor is another Projo prodigy whose gimmick is, as you can probably imagine, a pastor.
Well, let me explain in great detail why I love William Evers, right? For example, he had when I saw him live, he debuted a T-shirt. It was a CM Punk parody T-shirt. It's the famous white one with the Chicago Stars on the front with the red hand holding the lightning bolt and Best in the World on the back. The famous CM Punk T-shirt, right? But instead of holding a lightning bolt, it shows William Evers' hand holding a cross, and on the back it said Blessed in the World, which is just fantastic. You can't buy it anymore, and that's very annoying. His finishing move is called the Clothesline from Heaven.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. And as I only figured out a few months ago, his name is in fact a very, very clever pun, because his name is William Evers. Most people shorten William to Bill. That means his name is Bill Evers. Believer.
Ah.
Right? And he comes out to personal Jesus. It's so good.
It is a fun gimmick, and I will talk about it in a minute. But he came out to his music, and the backstory is that he won the what do they call it in progress,
the Natural Progression Series. It's essentially a tournament version of the Money in the Bank match, in that you win this tournament. Yeah. They tend to put youngsters in it, I think. You get to the end of that, you get your title shot at some point in the year.
Yeah, but I believe they called it title shot in the bag is what they win, essentially. And he came out to cash in, and he got in the ring with the referee. He waited for Marty Scurll to get up on his feet, and then hit him with a clothesline from heaven to win the Progress Championship belt in a moment that I don't think anybody in our building was possibly contemplating going in. And I guess that's why they came up with the name 5,000-1.
Exactly. If you don't know what the 5,000-1 is a reference to, I feel like we're going to have to, going forward, explain every single Progress. Because they quote The Office, they quote The Simpsons. This is a reference to Leicester City, who the football team, who won the Premier League despite they had odds at the start of the year of 5,000-1 mm-hmm. to win the title, and they did. So hence 5,000-1, and at the end, yes, 5,000-1 shot Believer wins the match, and it was freaking awesome. They came absolutely unglued for this moment.
Yeah, it felt to them that it was one of them. It was someone that had come through the system, that they had got behind, that they felt personally connected to, had come out and taken the title from this evil Marty Scurll. And the thing is that I wasn't personally fond of the finish. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, come on, Progress, you're better than that. You don't need a cheap finish like that. But at the same time, if I was booking it to the point where Bill Evers came out and won it, it was exactly the way I would have booked it, in terms of you got the crowd down, you got them thinking, oh, this is absolute nonsense. At one point, I do think they did start chanting
sugar.
Thank you. And they obviously hated the finish. And not only, as we said, their connection with Pastor William Evers, not only the fact it was one of them, they also were down after the championship match. So the end justifies the means, basically, in this circumstance, is the fact that they were booking it this way so that an excellent moment just became a memorable moment.
And they crowd-surfed him, and they chanted, he's one of their own, and Bill Smallman hugged him, and it was just a great scene. I will say, it was worth it for the short term. And I do think Bill Evers fine in the ring. I've yet to see him have a really great match. Yeah. When I saw him wrestle, he wrestled Jack Gallagher. And eventually we're going to have to get round to my personal opinions on Jack Gallagher. Tune in for that episode. The thing is, it's a very heavy gimmick. It permeates everything about him. It's on the lines of like an Umaga or you know, a Festus or a Hurricane Helms level of completely into the gimmick. It's not something that's very fluid, you know what I mean? Like the villain gimmick and Tommy End's anti-hero gimmick, they're not really confined into this kind of small niche. They can be adaptable, they can change to what they need to be. There's a strong core there, but not to the extent that everything about Pastor William Eva is the gimmick. And I don't know how much longevity it has unless he's going to be willing to kind of loosen up a little bit. But then, to the same token, if he loosens up a little bit and becomes less, you know, an actual priest as he's been presented, will that kind of lose the charm of the gimmick? It's a very big call they've made here. I'm excited to see where they go, and I'm happy for the pastor, but yeah, this is a big cards on the table moment for them here.
That's my concern, is that I don't know if it's smart having, essentially at the moment, a comedy gimmick, in a way, being the champion. I do think that the moment was worth it. I think it was a great way to move on from the Marty Skrull era into what is going to be the William Eva sort of era. But at the same time, I am concerned that it was booked as for that moment without thinking, how are we going to progress? Again, no pun intended. And it's interesting, and it's something that I'm looking forward to seeing how they book it moving forward, whether or not the character changes. And as again, like you said, I haven't seen a standout match from him yet. I don't know if he's going to be a short-term champion, or whether or not he's going to be evaluated on the job, as it were.
Mm-hmm. I did think that maybe they gave him that natural progression thing, and then, well, he's probably going to have to be champion. It could be a short-term thing. They haven't done that before. They've thankfully given all of their champions a bit of precedence. I think they set up in 2012, I think. So in that 4 years or 5 years that it's been, they've only had, I think, 7 Progress champions.
Yeah.
And they've never had a repeat champion, as far as I know. I know Jimmy Havoc held it for a good long while, like a year and a half plus. But yeah, they've only had a select number of champions. So that bodes well for him, but I wouldn't also be all that shocked if, come the next chapter, when Marty Skrull gets his rematch, which they have already announced for the next show, I wouldn't be surprised if Marty Skrull picks up the win.
And I wouldn't particularly argue with that either, to be quite honest. It all depends on what happens on that actual show and what happens during that match, and it's going to be interesting. It's something to keep you wondering now up until chapter 33. So with that being said, for the overall show, Darren, on the prowrestling.net letter grade scale, what would you give the show?
I'm hovering around the mid-range, so I go somewhere between a C plus and a B minus. Like the highs of this show, like the two excellent matches we talked about in Gargano and Haskins in the main event, and that kind of amazing moment at the end with the pastor, mm-hmm. who, by the way, if he wants to change his song up and not commit to personal Jesus, if he comes out to "I'm a Believer" by the Monkees,
oh god,
then I saw her face, now "I'm Believer," that would be fantastic. But on the same side of that, every other match had, at least as far as I can recollect, had a problem with it. There was something that really jarringly took away from that match in a big way. Nothing to the point where I don't think there was a necessarily bad match on the show. The match I didn't enjoy, but it wasn't necessarily because of match quality that I didn't enjoy them. So I've seen better shows from Progress, let's put it that way. So yeah, I'd go mid-range. So I'll C plus.
I'm going to settle in the B minus, because I agree with absolutely everything you said. But the Haskins against Gargano match, for me, has just been the best thing I've seen in such a long time that I can't give a show with that on it a C, even a C plus. I just can't. So for that reason only, I'm giving it a B minus. So that concludes our first review of Progress Wrestling. Feel free to get in touch with any feedback you have. But remember, going forward, we are going to be members only. So to sign up for membership and to get all the perks I talked about at the top of the show, go to prowrestling.net and look for the sign-up page and join us. I'm sure you won't be disappointed. For those who don't know, Darren is an extremely busy man, so I'm going to give him the opportunity to plug away, my friend.
You can follow me on Twitter at TheGutridge. You can go to my website, felentertainment.com. That's Fel spelled F-O-U-L, entertainment.com. We're going to have podcasts coming up soon about Pokemon Go, which has launched, and my co-host, Michael Owen, has managed to get a version of Pokemon Go, even though it's only out in America and Australia right now. He's playing that game, and I am not, and I'm getting round-the-clock flipping updates about how great the game is, and I feel like War Machine in the first Avengers movie, and I feel like something awesome's going on, but miles away from me. So that's annoying. We're also going to have podcasts about Comic-Con. We're going to have an Independence Day Resurgence podcast, hopefully up soon. We still got to record that, but yeah, by the way, don't go see Independent Resurgence. It's not worth your day. So yeah, any updates, you'll be able to find them at The Guttridge. Hayden?
You can find me at Hayden Gleet. I'm not writing anything at the moment, only because I'm in the process of moving back to my homeland of Wales. So I'm sort of sticking to audio only. So if you're wondering where my blogs are, that's the reason. It's simply that I'm spending all my free time, except for the lovely moments I get to spend with Darren weekly, packing and getting ready for the big move. So if you need to talk to me for any reason, you can find me on Twitter at Hayden Gleed, or my email address is on the website. Darren and I will be back next week on the member side of things with our ROH audio. And we'll be back with the next Progress Wrestling review probably in the second week of August, as the next show is on the 31st of July. Do we know what the card is yet, Darren?
They've announced 3 matches so far for Malice in Wonderland. Lovely. It's back at the Electric Ballroom, and they have announced, as announced on this show, we have the London Riders versus War Machine for the Progress Tag Titles. We have the rematch, so Pastor William Eva versus Marty Scroll for the Progress title, and making his return to Progress, former Progress Wrestling Champion Will Ospreay will be taking on Mark Haskins.
Good.
It sounds like it's going to be pretty good, and like I said, they're even though it's like their home turf, they still tend to stack up even those London shows quite a bit, even though they sell out regardless. So yeah, kudos to them.
Excellent. So, because that's happening on the 31st of July, they usually take about a week to get the show up on the on-demand service that they run. So we're probably back in the second week of August, which is great for me because my birthday's in the first week of August. It's coming up soon, Darren, so you need to get my birthday present ready.
Good joke, Hayden. Good joke.
So on that note, until next time, from Mr. Guttridge and myself, we hope you have a wonderful weekend.